Paul McLean Show
with Tara Records
on 100 to 102 Today FM.
Evening all, you're very welcome along to Thursday night's show. God, that was a quick week, wasn't it? Anyway, it's Paul McLean here till midnight tonight, as always on Today FM, well, apart from Fridays. Speaking of which, Louise, back on your radio from 7 o'clock tomorrow evening with Lost in Music for your Friday night sounds. Now, on this show tonight, your last chance to win those tickets to Future Islands. They play Ivy Gardens in the summer. Your last chance to win a pair of tickets so you and I can go along to that. Also, if you've been following me on Twitter, you'll know I had a chat yesterday with the great Glenn Matlock, the ex-Sex Pistols bass player, and it was really, really nice to meet him. Nice to have a lovely chat with him. Going to be letting you hear that this hour as well, just shortly after 9:30. 53102 is the number for your text. Live at todayfm.com, the address for your emails. And at P. McLean is where I tweet when I'm in the mood. Anoni and Paradise. Yeah, not on the album Hopelessness, although that phrase does feature in the chorus to that. Paradise from her. It's Paul McLean on Today FM. Back after the break, the XX have a real big proper monster international number one album on their hands with I See You. And rightly so, it's great. Track from it on the way straight after these. Today FM, Paul McLean and Glenn Matlock.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
I'm good. Good evening.
Good, yeah.
This is such a thrill to have you here. Thanks very much for taking the time to join me.
Not at all.
Before we get to what you're up to generally and musically, because there is a lot of that to be talked about as well, and obviously we have to talk about the Pistols, but we promise not to make that too painful. But why are you in Dublin? What have you been doing today?
I've been overdoing a thing for BIM, the music college here, and I was a guest lecturer, not lecturer, but gave a sort of talk about my experiences and the ups and downs and the pitfalls to look out for in the music business, which is kind of weird because although I've been playing music for 40 years, I've never really been in the music business. It's something that kind of goes on around musicians somehow.
Yeah, but as a performer and someone who's been a musician on that side of it for so long, you've got plenty to impart. Or is it a case of you don't realise how much you know until somebody asks you to start talking about it?
Yeah, pretty much. And vice versa as well, though. It keeps evolving and changing. And the more I know about the business, the less I know. So maybe some of these kids are learning these things all day long in their colleges can tell me a thing or two. But it's a two-way street.
Yeah, well, all the best things are. It took the form of a Q&A session. How did you find the questions? Were there any questions that really kind of brought you up short? We were kind of stuck? You got to think for a
Not
second?
Not really. I mean, I've had a lot of practice talking about the Sex Pistols. It's one of those things that people don't let you kind of move on from, and it's not such a terrible thing.
Yeah.
But John Robb was chairing the
of course,
the thing,
I know.
And he's
yes.
A good lad, and he's does his own work, and he's a real aficionado of things, so I was in good hands with him. Really, I'm not very good at standing up and just talking in front of people off the cuff, but you know, if somebody prompts me, I've got the right answers.
Yeah, I'm a bit like that myself. I find it difficult, which people find surprising when you tell them on the one hand you're a radio presenter and then on the other hand they invite you to speak at a thing and you go,
Right, yeah. It's a real knack.
Yeah.
I went to a thing a couple of years back now and I'm not the biggest fan of him, but it was some award ceremony and some people were given the compare jip. And he was fantastic, and it was Graham Norton. And
he
went up in my esteem. And many years ago, I used to play for this football club called the Penguins. They run about 8 teams in West London, and they had an annual dinner and dance, and they had guest of honour speaker, and they had Simon D. And it was just after he'd sort of fallen foul at the TV thing, and
yeah,
he was
getting
so much stick, but he was so good, he put everybody in their place, and I thought, yeah, that's a real knack to have.
It really is. What do you think the 19 or 20 year old Glenn Matlock would have done with, because they didn't have this sort of, I mean, I don't want to come over all kinds, they didn't have that in my day, but they didn't have these kind of seminars and rock sort of courses and things like that. Do you think that would have been much use to you back in 75, 76?
Well, that's an interesting question. I never really thought about it. Yeah, I think it might have been. I think you could have picked some things up. I think lots of people of our generation, musical careers, you have your success and then you spend the next 10, 15 years trying to write kind of financial and publishing and songwriting wrongs, whereas if you got it straight right from the get-go, you wouldn't have had that problem.
Yeah.
So I think in terms of that, it's kind of cool. But it seems they teach him different things, you know. Not, I mean, to me, the musical side is that you do something in life and then you learn to play guitar in your bedroom, and that should be kind of good enough to bring to the table whatever you've learnt in life. That's the musical side of things. But there's so much other stuff that goes on, you know, how to get a publishing deal, how to book gigs, how to run a website, how to do your social media these days, that you have to do.
Yeah.
That I find a struggle to do, and that's kind of where I fall down. And I think they teach them that. So.
Yeah, it's a much more multifaceted kind of
thing. So maybe if I'd had a bit of instruction in that back then, it would have been a bit different. But we had other fish to fry then.
It just was recently, as we got towards the end of last year, of course, the 40th anniversary of the notorious Bill Grundy TV appearance. Can you remember what was going through your head while that was unfolding? Because you seemed to kind of hang back a little. You left it to or you seemed to leave it more to, well, certainly to Steve.
Well, I didn't have a chance, basically. Yeah. Well, I was one of the first people to start talking, but it was one of the first TV things we ever did. It was live, it was going out, and you're a bit kind of, you don't know how it's going to go, not embarrassed, but it's just an odd scenario to be in. But what happened when we got there, they ushered us into the green room, and Steve Jones was in and out first, and it was winter, everybody had overcoats on.
Yeah.
And he went in and out this room. Steve's a bit of a, you know, skullduggery kind of guy, in and out with something under his coat, and he just went off somewhere. And then me, Paul and John went in the room, and we found like three of those 33 centilitre cans of Heineken warm, which we drank, and that was it. And next thing we're on the set. But what had happened was Steve Jones had found a bottle of Blue Nun, and he'd gone in another wine, and he'd gone in another room and drunk the whole bottle to himself.
The greedy kid.
And then sort of 5 or 10 minutes later, we're live on the telly, and the Blue Nun kicks in. That's what happened.
Yeah. I have to say, it's not big and it's not clever, but it is very, very funny, particularly Steve Jones' delivery. He's kind of, he's got his arms kind of folded, and he's actually very...
Yeah, smoking as well.
Yeah, he's smoking on the TV. It's so unusual. But it's very, very funny. Anybody who's listening who hasn't seen the clip, I'm sure most of you listening out there have seen it by now, but it is just one of the great TV moments.
I think the last thing that Steve says in it, I won't say words, but he ends up with a something rotter.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic.
It is brilliant. It's just fantastic. Delivery.
Sort of Derek and Clive.
Yeah, and although that was, I suppose that moment was the beginning of a lot of things for the Pistols. And in a certain sense, when you look back at it now, it was the point at which maybe things were just beginning to happen on one side, but also things within the band were starting to fall apart.
It's so to see, not because of that, but in itself, because I think we all thought it was kind of funny, you know, that might happen with the Pistols. There was a whole load of happenstance things that most bands, I think, would have kind of go, oh no, you'd blown it now, but they seem to work to our advantage. Like, there was a fight broke out when we was doing a gig at some club in London.
Yeah.
And we was actually trying to stop the fight, because, you know, when you're playing, if there's a fight, other than a girl taking her top off, a fight is the second worst thing, because nobody watches the band, they watch the fight. So we were trying to break it up. Somebody took a picture. Looks like we're fighting with the audience, and it was the front page of the Melody Maker. And things like that happened, and the Bill Grundy show was like that. But it did become a different thing, and I think it played right into Malcolm McLaren's hands, and it started to become like a comic strip band and a caricature and a sort of a rocking Bay City Rollers thing, which I wasn't interested in. I was in the band, it was like akin to the early Who, you know, with by the kids, for the kids kind of thing. And then it became a media exercise. And to me, it lost what it was all about.
And at what point did you realise, or was there a point where there were in your memory now where it really became apparent that, that Malcolm and his manipulations, shall we say, were turning the thing into a bit of a circus?
I think the very next day, actually. It was. I mean, when we did the Bill Grundy show, it was a tiny room. There was us, Bill Grundy, a couple of feet in front of us, the cameras 2 feet behind him, and 2 feet behind the cameras is Malcolm. And the look on his face when Steve started swearing, he was like, you know, Malcolm was bricking it. Oh, you've really blown it now, blah, 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 blah. But the very next day, instead of him trying to call up the press to get press on us, they were all calling him. And it just totally changed. And he did it very well. But yeah, it played right into his hands, really. And then I would go out and go and see a band or something, and we're not supposed to be able to play anywhere because we're banned. And promoters would come up to me and say, oh, Glenn, you know, we can't play. We'll put you on in Brighton. And I'd go and tell Malcolm. And he'd go, no, 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 we can't do that. And it kept happening. And I thought there was a dishonesty to it that I wasn't particularly interested in.
Yeah, Pistols, of course, and an early version of God Save the Queen. Playing that because it is the one that features my guest. You were just listening to Glenn Matlock on bass, and you can tell it's him. There's a lot more going on bass line-wise on that than there is on the final recorded version, where Steve Jones actually played all the bass parts, well, for the most part. I think there's one track maybe that poor old Sid actually managed to play on Never Mind the Bollocks. Anyway, that version of God Save the Queen, no future God Save the Queen. You'll find that on the it's been issued several times in several different iterations. Spunk. Spunk, of course, meaning pluck, courage, spirit, that sort of thing. Thanks once again to Glenn Matlock for dropping in. And he's coming back. He's hoping, well, we're hoping that he'll be able to find the time to come in and do a session for us so we get to hear what some of that new stuff that he's been working on, he was talking about there, sounds like. But that was him early in 77, just before he left the band and the Dave Goodman sessions. Hard to believe. So long ago now, 40 years ago, that version of God Save the Queen. Thanks to Glenn once again. Thanks to the people at BIM for helping to make that happen. And John Robb, who was actually with Glenn when he dropped by yesterday. Hello also to Lizzie Meadows and Fiona on Twitter. Also Jill in Galway. And they're all tuning in and enjoying the interview. Thanks very much for the kind words. I enjoyed it myself. It was a real pleasure meeting him. This is music from Belfast. It's a band, but it's a solo thing as well. One of those kind of things. Very voguish at the minute. Anyway, Melodian and great, great album called This Is Nowhere. And the opening track, title track, and the new single.
Don't like the way my feelings are falling. Everyone's a robot these days. I know what you'll say. The black pause is calling. At least I'm trying to free my...
Hey!
The Paul McLean Show.
With Tower Records.
Hey! 100 to 102. Today FM.
And you're very welcome back. 53102 for your text, live at todayfm.com for your emails. It's good for the competition this evening. Your last chance to win a pair of tickets to Future Islands. They take the stage at Ivy Gardens, part of the Ivy Gardens summer season of gigs, of course. Always great occasions and great gigs right across the summer lined up. And among them, Future Islands on the 6th of July. Tickets on sale tomorrow morning, bright and early. I'd say there'd be a fair demand for them if the competition this week's anything to go by. We have one final pair to be won on the show, actually. Just a wee bit later on, in about 20 minutes or so from now. In the meantime, though, I mentioned it before we went to the break. It's Australia Day today. And I heard Louise playing some Australian music earlier on. I thought I'd get in on the act as well. So getting things off to a clanging start. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. Battles from Columbia Mills. Really, really good single from them. They are back, and a session from them on the way for this show as well. I mentioned the break on Future Islands. Break, possibly, I announced that a little prematurely. I'm going to go to a break after I play you another track. This is from, actually staying with New Irish Music. Not quite a new song, but a new version of a song that's already appeared on the Ham Sandwich album, Stories from the Surface. It's been reissued again with some extra tracks, most of them live, apart from this re-recording of All Worthwhile. Future Islands competition on the way, I promise.
It will take time. Do you realize it was all worthwhile? I loved you then, but now we are just friends.
Hallelujah, money!
I don't know what's going on with that ending, but it is growing on me, the rest of it, I have to say. Hallelujah Money, Benjamin Clementine on vocals. Very odd, odd lyrics indeed. But I get what he's driving at. Gorillaz, whether that's going to be on the forthcoming album or not, I have no idea. Released in response to recent developments across the Atlantic, as indeed is the case with the track that preceded it, Arcade Fire, with the great Mavis Staples. And I Give You Power, great kind of call and response. Good, that's good for protest songs. Good, simple, rhythmic call and response kind of things. And it would appear protest is very much on the wind. Is that a quote from a boy song? There's protest on the wind once again, and rightly so, because I think it's just alarming. I was reading more headlines particularly from Washington. And I think we're in worrying times when we have unelected scumbags like Steve Bannon telling the media to literally keep their mouths shut. I think it's a dangerous sign, and it's a sign we're possibly in dangerous times. And I think we should all make a point of doing the opposite, to be quite honest. And I think strong language isn't inappropriate either. And so with that in mind, some righteous swearing and plenty of it. So be forewarned from our classic album of the week. From Empire and Dance, a brilliant, brilliant album, by the way. Empires and Dance, I beg your pardon, plural. And Celebrate from them. Before that, Susie and the Banshees, one of two Beatles covers, of course, one of two Beatles White Album covers that they did in their career. And that's the earlier one on the first album, The Scream, and the track you heard, of course, their incomparable take on Helter Skelter. That was requested by Fiona, who I believe listens in Belfast. Now, you did ask for it about an hour and a half ago during the Glenn Matlock interview that was in the show earlier on. By the way, if you missed that, you can listen back at todayfm.com. I'm sure we'll put a podcast of it up there as well. Anyway, Fiona was looking to hear Helter Skelter by Susie. Well, an hour and a half late, 90 minutes, that's good going by my standards. So hopefully you're still out there and you heard that. Fiona, thanks very much. First of those three, of course, the brilliant Joy Division. For Jim, who's also often on Twitter, something like myself, a bit of a Joy Division New Order fanatic, and there's nothing wrong with that. She's Lost Control, the album version, the Unknown Pleasures version, of course. What a great, great song. I read a thing online today about the various covers of it, some of which I knew about, some of which I didn't. It was a Financial Times article, oddly enough, and it was put up there by a French website, Joy Division Exhibit, who put up a lot of interest in Joy Division stuff. If you're a fan, do check them out on Twitter. This is a track from the 202s, Up in Thin Air. I played the regular version of this a few times. This is the Jape remix. Keep things up tempo and kind of cheerful ish well, as much as one can. George Michael, again, another person who sadly passed away Christmas Day, of course, just at the end of last year. And somebody was looking for some George Michael earlier on. Now, hopefully this will do instead of what you were looking for. Who was it? Oh yeah, Helen in Kilkenny. You wanted to hear a different track, but I thought I'd play this tonight just in view of the visit by the British Prime Minister to the current incumbent in the White House, and just brought back memories of this song written in response to the special relationship as it stood under Tony Blair and George W. Bush. And who would ever have thought you'd be looking back at the likes of Tony Blair and George W. Bush and kind of thinking, well, you know, well, maybe I wouldn't go that far, but you know what I mean. One, two, 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 Fearless Stuff from 1981, The Human League, of course, and Love Action, I Believe in Love. George Michael, Shoot the Dog before that with one of the cleverest samples in recent memory, in my humble opinion. That's it.